Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW, in Sitka, where it's 47 degrees under overcast skies. Today's Tuesday, June 5th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. The Sitka Salmon Derby is over, and Mike Vaughn appears to be the winner. Unofficial results show that Vaughn held on to the first place spot with a 41.4-pound fish caught during the first weekend.
We looked at it and said, well, you know, we might make 40 pounds with this, and because we had just started fishing, we didn't want to run to the weigh station yet. So actually, I had a scale on board, and that put it, you know, probably 40 or, you know, between 40 and 41 pounds. So we had a good idea at that point.
Vaughn and his fishing partner landed the fish around 7 a.m. on the Derby's second day, which left a lot of time for someone to reel in a bigger king. Vaughn says waiting for the end of the Derby wasn't too painful.
It was looking better at 6 o'clock. The last hour was kind of a long wait, but it all worked out.
Top prize in the Derby is 2 round trip tickets on Alaska Airlines plus $7,000 cash. Dave Bandick is in second place with a 39.4-pound fish, and Jackson McGraw, age 12, is in third place with a 37.6-pound king. Researchers from the Smithsonian Institution are in Sitka. The group works at the National Museum for the American Indian. The collection, located near Washington, D.C., includes countless items from Alaska. Staff members at the museum are well acquainted with those items, but they don't often get to see where the items began. To do that, they turn to Sitka resident and renowned Tlingit weaver Terry Rothkar. KCAW's Ed Ronco went along with Rothkar and the Smithsonian staff as they searched for the items.
We're just walking up the road, guys. We're going to be looking on the uphill side, and we're looking for a fern that's reaching out from the cliffs, between the rocks.
Terry Rothkar is leading a group of 7 people up Blue Lake Road. Their mission? Find the maidenhair fern.
It's a fern that for years, gosh, me and my kind of self-teaching, I got the wrong fern forever. I kept getting the wrong ferns. If you start looking around, there's a lot of different ferns here.
You have a lot of different ferns.
There's all kinds.
Eventually, Rothkar says she had to ask a friend for help.
And I said, well, you know, Mary, having difficulty getting those ferns. Ah, geez, I've got a bunch in my yard. Just come on over. And I said, well, where do you get them in the wild? Well, honey, have you been up to the dam at Blue Lake? Right at the base of the dam, there's lots of them. I'm like...
This group does not need to hike all the way to Blue Lake in order to find some ferns. They soon appear, popping out of the rock face next to the road.
See those black stems?
Oh,
right,
yeah.
Boys and girls, and you see them when you're in looking at the baskets. It's that brilliant brown, shiny color. That's some maidenhair fern there.
The stems of maidenhair fern are used in traditional basket weaving. These researchers from Washington, D.C. have likely seen thousands of the stems before, but in finished baskets that make up part of the museum's collection, not as individual components in the wild.
We can only do so much to understand the nature of these pieces.
Kelly McHugh is an objects conservator at the National Museum of the American Indian.
Coming here gives us the context that we're missing, really, and it's a context for understanding so that we can kind of better and more responsibly care for the collection.
The group arrived in Sitka on Friday night. By Saturday afternoon, when we walked up Blue Lake Road together, they had already moved into lodging on the Sheldon Jackson campus, met with native elders who had attended school there, visited Fortress of the Bear, and gone searching for ferns. Still ahead on the agenda was a kayaking trip, a meeting with carver Tommy Joseph at Sitka National Historical Park, and more.
We're overwhelmed. I mean, we've been here for just a day, really. And I think being welcomed at the airport with the dance group and having the elders there and just knowing what that means is incredibly impactful for us.
I am a raven from the snail house.
That's Terry Rothkar introducing herself by her Tlingit name. She says she wants to build bridges between those who preserve older native art and objects and those who are practicing the art.
Because I think what's happened is our old objects in the museums, while they represent a historical place,
we're still creating those pieces. And I think now it's time to start documenting and creating a repository of what's happening today.
This group is in Sitka with help from several granting agencies, including the National Endowment for the Arts and the Cargill Foundation. Rothkar says having them on the ground, where they can see and touch and smell things, makes a big difference. She calls it place-based learning.
It's really hard for me to just keep my mouth shut and allow the place to have a first-person experience with them, because I want to say, oh, wait a minute, did you see this? So, yeah, that part's probably the hardest for me to just be shut up and allow the place to do its job. So,
if Kelly McHugh from the Smithsonian is any indication, the place did its job. She says this trip will give them a new perspective when they head back to Washington. Or maybe that's if they head back to Washington.
I feel like we treat the collection with respect, but I think it's going to be approaching it in a way that we'll have a greater understanding of who made these pieces, why they made them, you know.
And you guys look like you're having a lot of fun besides.
Oh my God, it's been a blast. I think the challenge is going to be getting us to leave, really.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The Smithsonian Conservators will give a public presentation at the Sheldon Jackson Museum this afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m. You can link to the National Museum of the American Indian through our website, kcaw.org. A young Sitkan is taking a shot at winning a legislative seat and hopes redistricting can help him. 23-year-old Jonathan Christ Tompkins declared his candidacy on Friday, which was the filing deadline. Christ Tompkins was born and raised in Sitka and graduated from Sitka High School in 2007 and then attended Yale.
I love Alaska. I love Sitka. I love Southeast Alaska. And I think one of the best ways to contribute to a place you love is to try to create value there. And I think politics and policy is a really important way to create value, and that it governs the way we all live to a certain extent, and hopefully does that in a way for the better.
Christ Tompkins has not previously held an elected office, but volunteered for the U.S. Senate campaign of former Alaska Governor Tony Knowles in 2004 during his freshman year of high school. He also volunteered for President Barack Obama's 2008 campaign. Technically, Christ Tompkins has filed for the August primary ballot, but with no other Democrats in the race, his advancement to the November ballot is almost certain. That puts him up against Bill Thomas, a four-term Republican incumbent who co-chairs the powerful House Finance Committee. But Christ Tompkins says redistricting makes it anyone's race.
I wouldn't be running if I didn't think I could win. And part of this district is pretty new to me. And part of this district is pretty new for him. In fact, more of this district is new for him than it is for me. And so I think it's a bit of a question mark for both of us.
Thomas disagrees.
I've been 8 years in the legislature, and like I said, I knew Ben Gusendorf and Dick Eliason, and I think that Sitka respects leadership and experience.
Thomas is a commercial fisherman, something he says will help him in Sitka. He says he wasn't surprised to find a challenger on the candidate list when the deadline passed on Friday.
I've never met the young man, but I look forward to it, and we'll just see what happens, I guess. I wasn't surprised. I was probably more surprised I didn't have a Republican opponent than anything.
The Alaska primary election is August 28th. The general election takes place on November 6th. The state's local boundary commission has signed off on a new Petersburg borough with a change to the northern boundary near Juneau. The commission voted 4-1 on Friday to put the proposed Petersburg borough to a public vote of local residents sometime later this year, Joe Vignicki reports.
Commissioner Larry Simmons of Soldotna said residents of the area had common interests.
Many are here because they enjoy the natural beauty, the relatively sparse population of the area, the fish and game resources, the ability to make a living, even if that living is heavily dependent on a subsistence lifestyle. The economy of the area is driven largely by commercial fishing.
Under the proposal from Petersburg, the city government would dissolve and become a new borough government with taxing authority and responsibility for education and planning services. As originally proposed, the Petersburg borough would cover more than 4,300 square miles of land and water around Mitkoff and Kuprinoff Islands, along with a portion of the mainland and central southeast. Borough supporters argue that the new government would give locals a greater say in development in the area and say the city is already providing services to the region. The borough would incorporate several hundred residents who live outside of Petersburg city limits, including some who live in remote homesteads on Kuprinoff Island in the mainland. Commissioner Lavelle Wilson of Tok was the only opposition vote. He did not think the people of the area had common interests.
I can't see where they have a lot in common. People live way out there with the people that live in town. The people that live in town are mostly interested in the growth of the city and the well-being and so forth. And people out there can care less, really. They basically want to live their lifestyle. And so I would have to disagree on that.
The decision followed a testimony from the public, neighboring municipalities, native corporations, and tribal governments. Borough opponents outside the city cited a variety of concerns. Some were worried about too little representation and too much government and potential new rules or regulations. Others argued that creation of a borough government would mean no benefits or services for them. Both Juneau to the north and Cake to the west objected to Petersburg's proposed boundaries. Juneau submitted a competing petition for roughly half the territory within Petersburg's proposal. Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello was disappointed, but said he was not surprised by the commission's decision.
Having the hearing in Petersburg, and of course the numbers of citizens who came out and testified and I think made a very strong case for Petersburg.
The LBC voted to amend Petersburg's original proposal and followed recommendations of staffers, excluding Tracy Arm and the Whiting River in the northeast corner of the area proposed for incorporation. The LBC vote does not make the Petersburg borough a done deal. It'll still take a vote of a majority of residents in the area to approve the new government. Mail-out voting will be conducted by the State Division of Elections sometime in the fall. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Mostly cloudy skies today. Chance of showers this afternoon. Highs around 55. This is KCAW in Sitka.